Hello and thank you for joining us for this local history program on Lake Macquarie. In previous programs, we've seen the municipality when it was a shire, in Depression years and war years. We saw early transport and boating on the lake. And in this program, we look to the lake itself. To begin, we go back prior to the Ice Age, as Dr. Brian Timms explains.
Lake Macquarie was a system of interconnecting valleys, which opened through where Belmont and Swansea now lie. The main valleys were from the north, Cockle Creek, from the west, Dora Creek, and from the southwest, Mannering Creek. There are also quite a few smaller valleys, like Killabean and Wyee, and so on.
When the Ice Age ended, we see considerable changes in the water level.
The sea level rose so that the lake, these valleys were flooded up to maybe a height a little higher than present or a little lower. Anyhow, with the flooding, the two things happened. The ends of the valleys, or the major valleys, started to fill with sediment so that you had the growth of floodplains on the Dora Creek, Cockle Creek, and smaller ones on the other creeks. And at the other end, at the open end, at Belmont and Swansea, you had a sandbar built. This sandbar was built from sand that was carried offshore during the Ice Ages. It is not made of sand from the local creeks, from Cockle Creek or Dora Creek. It comes from sand offshore. We have evidence of spits, which are now about 2 metres higher than the present lake level. Point Wollstonecraft is one example. Shingle Splitters is another. We have evidence of raised beaches. There are some of these around Wanji on the southern side. We have evidence of cliffs, which are now 10, 20 metres away from the lake edge, with either sand in front of them or gravel, or actually rock platforms in some cases, which have now isolated these cliffs from the present action of the water.
Dr. Brian Timms commenting in this special program on Lake Macquarie history as we look at the lake.
What flora and fauna do we see around the lake?
The lake's very interesting from its viewpoint of flora and fauna. First of all, there's the flora and fauna of the lake waters itself. It has quite a range of estuarine fish species, flathead and flounder and brim and whiting, all the well-known fish. There are prawns in Lake Macquarie, and of course the usual array of mollusks and other arthropods. The lake in its deeper parts has no plants except the floating plant population, the phytoplankton, but as you reach the shallower waters of the lake, there's quite a fair bit of what we call lake weed, plants like zostera or eelgrass. But as you move onto the shore, one of the noticeable things about the lake is that almost the entire lake edge, or until a lot of it was cleared, is dominated by a species of she-oak, which we call a swamp she-oak, Casuarina glauca. And it's a fine tree and gives some of the lake some of its atmosphere. Also around some of the marshier areas and some of the bays, just back from some of the bays of the lake, are stands of paperbark trees. But as you move a little further away from the lake and start to move uphill a little, you come to cabbage gums, and further up, now about 30, 50, 100 feet away from the lake shore, you come into a community which is made up of rusty gums and trees like various species of eucalypt, including the various mahoganies, bloodwoods, and further away from the lake we come to, particularly around the southern end of the lake, that interesting tree called the scribbly gum. So the forests around the lake are made up of largely of eucalypt trees, and in the better communities, that is richer soils, some of these trees do reach quite a considerable height, and in fact back from the lake on the western side, there are areas of state government forestry commission forests.
Well, we've still got plenty of bird life. There's not much shooting done around the lake now. Well, you got swans, ducks. Still got the occasional big seagull you see around the lake.
Pelicans?
Pelicans. When there's a bad year inland, we get invaded by pelicans. Thousands of them, actually. They usually come after bad years inland.
The land fauna of the lake is interesting and varied. Of course, no longer do we have any macropods, and wallabies, kangaroos and so on, which were reported last century by the earlier settlers. There was quite an array of these animals. In fact, as recently as earlier this century, there was a faunal reserve on Pulbara Island, at which there were emus and kangaroos. But they've gone now, but we still have our assemblage of local marsupials, including bandicoots, brush-tailed possums. The bird life of the foreshores of the lake and the land back from the lake is rich and varied. In the clearer areas, we see birds like rosellas and galahs. In the more wooded areas, we find animals such birds such as the noisy miner, butcher bird, and, of course, the good old Australian kookaburra. And at night, you'd come across owl species and tawny frogmouths. So the lake does have quite an interesting avifauna or bird life.
What about the flora of the area? How has that changed over the years?
Well, there's no evidence of change. All we can say, we don't have fossils, but all we can say is that the plants are of lower diversity, particularly the algae. You look at the open coastline, there's a tremendous variety of brown algae, red algae, green algae. In Lake Macquarie, there's only a few species, particularly green sea lettuce, which is growing at the moment, this being summer. There's a number of brown algae. There's also quite a lot of eelgrass, which is a flowering plant, which grows in estuarine conditions, which you will not find at the open ocean. So in Lake Macquarie, there are some animals which are found in the freshwater ends of estuaries, which you would find, say, in the Hunter region or in the Mile Lakes region, which is a much fresher system, or towards Gosford.
Dr. Brian Timms, Kevin MacDonald and Don Cameron. Man is also making his presence felt on the lake, using it as a cooling system for power stations, clearing the shores of the lake and disturbing the fish by changing the environment of the water.
Well, we're concerned as an environmental education association as to what is happening to the lake. Now, let me acknowledge, I don't want to sound like a prophet of doom, that the lake has always been and is still a beautiful lake, if not the most beautiful lake on the coast of New South Wales. What we're concerned about are the multiple threats to the lake and what these will be in the long term. If I could just outline some of these threats to the lake. The lake has a very convoluted shoreline. If you look at a map of it, it's certainly not just a round or oval-shaped lake. It has many insulas jutting into it and little bays and so on. And much of the lake shoreline is indeed very shallow. You can wade out quite a long way. And even in the deeper parts of the lake doesn't go much deeper than about 30, 40 feet. So much of the lake is very shallow. Now, shallow lakes are vulnerable to all forms of pollution. Now, some of this pollution takes the form of foreshore clearing. Now, whenever the tree cover is removed, naturally, whenever it rains, you're going to get more silt load, more earth washed into the lake. And this will wash nutrients into the lake, which will enrich the waters and tend to increase weed growth. Now, we've seen this sort of thing happening at a lake like Tugra Lakes, where weed growth is so great that they have to get bulldozers in periodically and push the piles of weed onto the shore, carting away. So we should take a warning by looking at what's happened to similar lakes and make sure it doesn't happen to Lake Macquarie. So foreshore clearing is one thing. Now, people must clear land, of course, for housing, holiday buildings and so on, parks, but we must make sure that not too much land is cleared and the buffer areas are left, that buildings are set back from the foreshore of the lake to minimise this impact. You see, another trouble is the visual amenity or the beauty of the lake is lost or impaired if there's too much in the way of urban development, monotonous townscape and so on, not to mention coal mines, power stations and the like, and what people come to the lake for, many people, tourists and others, is for the beauty of the lake, and they don't want that marred by too much obvious development at the hand of man. Now, some of the other threats to the lake would include the thermal pollution that the lake receives already from Vales Point Power Station, and which will be exacerbated by the warm waters which will come from Eraring Power Station when it's commissioned. Now, I know we must have power. We all depend on electric power. But we're very concerned to hear talk, for example, that the Electricity Commission is considering building another power station on the lake at Crangan Bay by 1990 or the year 2000, which isn't far off. And one just has to take stock at this point in time as to how many power stations can be built on the lake without raising the temperature of the waters to such an extent that it will favour species of plants and animals that like the warmer waters to the disadvantage of those coal-loving animals, coal-water-loving animals, such as the fish, for example, the brim and flathead and all that, which tend, as we've seen in other studies done on similar lakes, to drop in population numbers when the temperature of the waters increases.
Well, I've fished on the lake ever since they've been put here, and I can remember the bays and the conditions the bays were in before they came here. I can get a comparison.
How would you compare them?
Well, it tends to affect the whole ecological system. It changes it, actually. The eel grasses, the weeds, the shells on the bottom, where the hot water comes out, appears to have changed. Well, I know it's changed because I dredge up some of the stuff in my nets, and it's changing into a tropical environment. You actually get fish that come from the tropics living in these warm waters of the powerhouse.
Yes, I think there may be some effects in the future. One power station probably makes very little difference. Two power stations, Wanjee Vales Point, probably doesn't make a lot of difference again either. Certainly near the outfall, there is a slight difference. There's good growth of some mussels, and you often see fishermen near the outfalls of these power stations, so fishing must be better there in some respects. Now, the bigger Eraring one, it's bigger than the others, there may be some problems. The Electricity Commission have gone to a lot of trouble to look into this, and it seems as though the changes will be minimal. I say seem because their evidence suggests seems, but sometimes you never know.
Dr. Brian Timms, Kevin McDonald and Don Cameron commenting on the changes in the lake. Joe Matthews looks back to the lake years ago and recalls the abundance of fish.
Oh, yes, the lake was teeming with fish when we first came here. And when I was in the teens, it was nothing. You'd go out the back there and catch fish by the boatload. We still get a lot, though, but nothing like it was years ago. And the water's not like it was years ago.
So the water's not like it was, why is that?
No, the water was beautiful. And the place was teeming with birds, and they were all gone. Of course, that's progress, isn't it? So they say.
What did you pay for fish?
Oh, we used to go down with a bucket, and if we had sixpence, we got sixpence worth, and if we had a shilling, we got a shilling's worth. But we always got a field either way, so it didn't matter. Because this is back when I was about 16, 17. But even now you get a lot of fish. You go down and get $2 worth of fish, you'll get a lot of fish. But they don't fish so much because all the old fishermen have died out now, you know.
Danny Harrington looks back to the lake.
Oh, it's a beautiful lake. It's a very big one. Really, it's really too big to be classified as a lake, in my book, because it does put you... When you see on last Saturday, we saw all the yachts, and we've got so many sailing clubs around here, and all the boats was on the lake there, and it looked like Sydney Harbour. Mm. It's big enough for a harbour.
Danny Harrington commenting. When he had told us of the silting problems, Dr. Brian Timms and Charles Hollis comment, and also consider the Swansea Bar.
It's a very shallow entrance to a large lake. In fact, Lake Macquarie is the largest estuarine lake in New South Wales. It's a very shallow entrance, rather dangerous and with rather strong currents.
How can you in fact get rid of the sandbar permanently?
I don't think there's any way within economic reason of getting rid of it. It's there.
Swansea Bar, it's got a bad name, and we've lost a couple of lives on Swansea Bar, but it's not a bar that is bad as they paint it to be. It's nothing like the bars further up north, but the big thing is people should get a little bit of local knowledge before they use the bar. And with a bit of local knowledge, almost any time you can get in. There's only one time is hard northeasters and a run out tide. You don't go near the bar, but anyone that's had any experience at all, well, they should realise that that is taboo as far as bars go anywhere along the coast.
Perhaps for someone listening to this program who doesn't really know what a bar is, could you define what a bar is?
Yes, well, the bar is the sand that's washed out from the river to the entrance with a strong run-out tide. And once it gets out into the past the entrance, it comes into the still water and it just drops off there. And you finish up creating a big shallow bank. Well, then the seas coming in from the opposite direction break on the bar, like it does on the beach, and creates this the breakers. And to use a bar, you generally find a narrow gutter in it somewhere, so you've got to find the gutter and come through. Swansea Bar has got what we call leads on it, or beacons to come in on, but you still have to have local knowledge to come in, because the beacons are not always in the right place. On some bars, they have the beacons on trolley lines, so as they can move them back and forwards to line up whichever way the bar moves with the current and the winds.
Well, let's look at the size of the lake and hear these comments.
It's 11 metres deep in a number of places off Wanji and Pulborough Island. It has a shoreline length of 174 kilometres. In fact, some people say it's 365 miles around the shoreline. You walk a mile one day each year, and you're one day each for a whole year, and you'll get round it. That is not true. It is only about 174 kilometres around the shoreline.
So, for someone who wants to walk a mile a day, he's going to go around a couple of times in a year.
Oh, yes, he'll get round three or four times in the year. That's if he doesn't get bogged in some places.
When I went to school, our lake was 365 miles for every day in the year. That's how we had to remember it. You go in each little nook and corner, 365 miles.
Well, the lake, you can take it by their prominent names, and that would be... We take Spears Point, came from Mr. Spears there. Warner's Bay came from Warner. Grant, was a grant given to Spears, and also to Mr. Warner of Warner's Bay. And then Crowder's Bay was an Englishman sent out here. He took up an area of land. Then you get around on the back end of Belmont, back into there. And all of those places there, bays, were grants of lands, probably some 400 or 500 acres.
Kevin MacDonald looks to changes in the lake over the past 50 years.
I have heard from the general manager of the Fishermen's Co-op that the fishing in the lake that's carried on by professional fishermen is as good as it's ever been. Now, the amateur angler often complains that he doesn't catch many fish and sometimes blames power stations or siltation or whatever other cause, but probably the fact is that handline fishing in the lake... is as good as bad as it ever was. However, you ask about what the most significant change to the lake is. I would say the most significant change is the level of foreshore clearing and the subsequent siltation into the lake. There is plenty of evidence that this is going on.
Well, if people want to keep the lake, what can they do to stop all this damage continuing?
Well, that's a good question, because I think things can be done looking positively at the level of the individual and at the collective level of organisations within the community. Now, at the level of the individual, one person might say, well, I'm not going to spoil the lake much if I throw a empty plastic bait container overboard when I'm fishing, or a beer bottle into the lake. But the point is, there's not one person fishing in the lake or using the lake. There are tens of thousands of people, particularly in summer, using the lake. Now, if every person threw a can or a bottle or a plastic bag overboard or into the lake, then of course the lake would be badly affected. In fact, one wonders now what one would see if we drained the lake and had a look at the bottom of the lake. But so every individual has a responsibility to minimise their pollution of the lake, which they love so much. I mean, they've come there to swim or fish or water ski, so they have a responsibility to look after it. So their rubbish should be taken home and put in garbage tins, and all those sort of precautions. Now, at the level of the community, we, of course, have organisations, both local government and state government level, which are charged with the responsibility of looking after the lake. Now, the environmental officers, health and health surveyors of Lake Macquarie Municipality, as part of their daily work, of course, is to investigate claims of pollution and so on. And the State Pollution Control Commission, the Maritime Services Board, the Department of Environment and Planning, and the National Parks and Wildlife Service, and other government bodies have also their fair share of responsibility.
And a final comment on man's influence from Dr. Brian Timms.
This is a difficult question because, A, it hasn't been studied in detail, and, B, it's open to opinion. Certainly, the pristine nature of the shoreline, the beautiful shoreline, the trees and the shrubby and grassy edges have been changed around large areas of the lake. I particularly think of the area south of Valentine where there's been quarrying. It's quite an eyesore, or at least it is to me. The Electricity Commission have been very careful in the Dora Creek region in their building of lake of the Araring Power Station so as not to disturb the area very much. And I think overall they've done quite a reasonable sort of job.
And this has been a local history program on the lake. For further information, contact your local library.